You're listening to Radio Caravan with Scott Hayes and Robert Palmer and reporter Megan Jamerson.
All right, good morning, Laguna Beach.
You're good morning, good morning.
And that was Laguna Beach, the sound of Laguna Beach at 8 a.m. in the morning. You're listening to KX93.5 FM. And I'm Scott Hayes here with my co-host,
Robert Palmer. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. And this is Radio Caravan. Robert, what's going on in your world, please, quickly?
We got a lot going on in our world. It's going to be 80 degrees outside, and the rest of the country is under snow and ice. So it's a beautiful day to be alive, beautiful day to be in Laguna Beach.
Yeah, a great reason to live in Laguna Beach. Hey, by the way, I want to mention a couple of things real quickly. We're hosting the Pearl Street Sessions on April 3rd downstairs at the Wine Gallery. And Robert, who's coming in to perform that night?
Jack Tempchin is coming in, very famous songwriter, singer, and he's going to be bringing some friends from Honk, and it's going to be a fantastic evening with wine appetizers and some beautiful music.
And that's April 3rd. By the way, Jack Tempchin wrote such songs as Peaceful, Easy Feeling, You Belong to the City, Already Gone, Smuggler's Blues, and so many others.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay, also in the studio, we have engineer reporter Megan Jamerson. Good morning, Megan.
Magerson.
Good morning.
Magers.
And we got the Sparkle Film crew. We got Harvey out there. And let's just get started with our first segment. Robert, you want to lead us?
Yeah, I'd like to just bring up something, though. Today is Daylight Savings Time starts at 2 a.m. this morning. And I wonder if anyone knows how that started.
I don't.
Well, there was an ambassador to France by the name of Benjamin Franklin in 1784. He woke up one morning and said, what a beautiful morning. If only we could have more daylight to work. And, oh, by the way, it would save lots of candles. And that was the original idea came from.
That's funny.
Early to bed, early to rise.
I love that.
Makes a man wealthy and wise.
That's very cool.
Another bit of trivia. Now, everyone knows there's a lot of turmoil going on in the Ukraine and Crimea. Yeah. But do you know how Crimea became a part of Ukraine?
I don't.
Well, that would have been in 1954, a very drunk Nikita Khrushchev on his birthday decided he would decree and give as a birthday present Crimea to the Ukraine. Now, back then it was the USSR, so it didn't really matter. Needless to say, today it matters a hell of a lot.
Yeah, very.
So that's how it all started. It had originally been conquered by Catherine the Great in 1784, so it's been a part of Russia for that long.
You are a wealth of information.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You want to do a police blotter?
I think we should.
All right.
Today's police blotter.
Well, since we've got the sheriff in here today, we thought we would go more nationwide on our crime blotter, not focus on some of the minor indiscretions that occur locally in her jurisdictions. So I thought we'd start off today with New Mexico. Headline, cops, woman beats her mother senseless with a vibrator. Yes, this is true. March 5th. A New Mexico woman allegedly bashed her mother in the head with a vibrator during a confrontation on Sunday night.
I wonder what that argument was about.
I don't know, but I would have liked to have heard it. The elderly Kathy was found bleeding profusely and pointed to a car when the police arrived. The police went to the car, but only a male companion was in the car, and guess what he had with him?
I don't even want to guess.
One vibrator. However, they found Kathy walking out of a home later. She claimed that her mother beat herself senseless with the vibrator. Police did not buy it. She was promptly arrested.
There are so many one-liners that can come out of that. I don't even know where to begin.
There are indeed. And we, of course, now go to the crazy capital of the world, Florida. This is a shout-out to my sister who lives down there. Man urinated on people near Florida campus. Police are tracing down the PP bandit in the University of Miami. Police are searching for a man who has been urinating on people near the University of Florida campus. The victims said that they were just standing there minding their own business when they felt themselves being peed upon. Apparently, the man fled, but they've got an all-points bulletin out for him. And last and most troubling, apparently this guy didn't like Match.com. He liked Mutt.com. Police say Florida man had sex with Pitbull as neighbors begged him to stop. Shocking neighbors pleaded with their neighbor, says the Tampa Tribune, when Bernard Mishkovich, 57, was arrested after charged with animal cruelty for having sex with his Pitbull. Now, that's dangerous sex.
Wow. Well, that's interesting stuff this morning, Robert. Very
makes Orange County look pretty tame.
It really does.
Doesn't it? Don't you feel safer about
Laguna Beach now?
Thank you, Sheriff Hutchins, for keeping us so safe here in Orange County.
By the way, you want to mention our guest this morning, Robert?
We're honored to have Sheriff and Coroner Sandra Hutchins here this morning. She's fantastic. She'll be running again first female sheriff in the county, 12th sheriff we've had, and probably the best we've ever had.
Yeah, very nice. A friend of yours as well, right?
She will deny that, but yes, she does.
Fair enough. Hey, in the studio this morning, we have San Francisco reporter Max Tech. Good morning, Max. And, you know, you made it down here just to come into the studio for us. Thank you.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Beautiful, man. So what's going on in the tech world these days?
So as you remember, last week I mentioned spritzinc.com, that speed reading forum. Well, last week on Facebook, it was the highest trending website. So I don't know if that's all in thanks to KX93.5, but it makes us wonder who really is listening.
We thank our six listeners. Thank you.
Speaking of listening, United States government sues Sprint allegedly for overcharging wiretapping.
Oh, they didn't get a fair deal on illegal wiretapping, did they?
What?
It's a shame, you know. It's a real shame. They said they inflated the price, so I thought it was pretty funny the government complaining about inflating prices. next thing in news, the iPhone 5S motion tracker keeps tracking even after the battery dies. Now, I didn't believe this originally, so I took a frequency meter, took my phone apart, let it die, put it up to the antenna as well as the battery, and I was getting about a 20 gigahertz or a 20 hertz reading.
How does it do that?
Steve Jobs, man.
The ghost of Jobs.
A cybersecurity firm reports the largest hack of all time. 360 million personal account records were put on sale for a black market website this last week.
Let me ask you this. There's a black market website where people buy and sell stolen identities?
Yeah, remember I mentioned that, like, the interweb a couple weeks ago? Uh-huh. That's what people would be able to get it on.
I can't believe that.
Yeah.
And how many did you say? How many millions?
360 million personal accounts.
And I don't know how many people, but I wonder how many in this room were affected by that. Probably quite a few. That's scary. That's really scary.
Very scary.
Yeah. If they have, and I know we got a busy day, but I'm curious, if they know this website exists, how can those transactions continue to exist? What is the process by which they're doing it secretly if everybody knows about it?
Good question. Thank Actually you. Leads me into Bitcoin, and I'm going to attempt to explain Bitcoin for everyone today.
You'll be the first person in history to do so.
So this is going to be an achievement if I do it correctly. All right. So Bitcoin, as many of you know, is probably one of the most popular topics or Google Trends right now. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin is basically digital gold. It's the world's first invention of decentralized currency, which means there's no financial institutes or no central person in command. Even the developers of Bitcoin have no control over it. So just like gold, there's a set amount. And although we probably don't know how much gold there really is out there, but I feel like we do, there's about 2.1 quadrillion pieces of Bitcoin out there. And by design, there is a known fixed supply. It is transacted directly between people, so there's no middleman involved. And so the reason why this makes this so popular, especially with these anonymous things, is they run algorithms that they delete your whole traceback. So if I were to give you Bitcoin, Scott, and I would have to hold it on a USB drive on my computer, just like gold, the person holding it is the only way to back it up. There's literally no way to back up Bitcoins besides having it on you. So if I were to send it to you, there would be no recollection, if you were someone to trace the records, that I even had it in the first place. You would just be the sole owner over it, and everyone would think you had it the entire time.
Wow.
This is like digital cash. It's like a secret underground currency.
Yeah. And unlike PayPal and all these other sites, they do have an influence over the site. They can monitor transactions. But with Bitcoin, no one has control.
I don't really quite get it, I'll have to be honest. I don't know how that's working in this world, but it sounds fascinating. I mean, literally, they exchange these Bitcoins?
Yeah.
Yeah? And if you can't exchange with somebody else who has a Bitcoin, then it's useless?
You can actually sell them, just like you can buy them, kind of like the stock market. And a lot of people have been selling them. And Bitcoin's been going nothing but up these past couple months. It went down because of this alleged Mt. Gox scandal. Someone sold or hacked into millions of people's Bitcoins. Mm-hmm. But something I wanted to mention is, because another way to understand it, just like gold, there's Bitcoin miners. Mm-hmm. And what they actually do is they go into the web, and instead of like getting an axe, going up to San Francisco and like the 40s and start picking at like rocks, they're actually making computer programs that run mathematical algorithms that start mining the surface of the web, because Bitcoins are hidden all over the web. That's the beauty, like that's why it's so cool, because it's like hidden inside of the internet. And so they have people literally digitally pickaxing their little armies of like computer solving like algorithms, and And that's how you get Bitcoins.
Cool. Wow. Hey, speaking of invisible, I heard this thing called Invisible Cow. You know about that thing?
Yeah, so invisiblecow.com. as I was mentioning earlier, it is the most educational website I've ever found. It's a blank webpage, findtheinvisiblecow.com, and it's all white, and your cursor is just sitting there, and you have to move the cursor around. And the closer you get to this, quote, invisible cow, you hear the words, cow, 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 cow. And it just gets louder and louder and louder. And then you level up to fox, and then you get the goat, and the goat's in a British accent, so that's pretty entertaining. And I've done nothing but learning from this site, you know?
So instead of studying for school, yeah, how many hours have you been on Digital Cow?
Morsels of wisdom.
I'm learning the true power of friendship, algebra level 2.
Oh, wow.
That's spiritually enlightening as well.
Spiritually, I found God through Find Cow.
Found God. Wow, there you go.
Got that going for you.
Hey, Max, thanks a lot for coming in, man. It's good to see you. You got to get down here more often, yes?
I'd love to. Thank you.
Yeah, you're a natural, by the way. They should do a whole hour on just Max Tech. There's some interesting stuff there.
Yeah, I do that by myself in the shower, so.
All right, very cool, very cool. Hey, let's do About Town. I know Megan and Robert, you got some things you want to chat about that's going on, yeah?
We do. We got a couple things going on. SCR is starting a new show this week, Reunion. It's about a high school reunion. It's supposed to be very funny, very dark. Strongly encourage that. And Jackson Pollock, after many, many, many years, is unveiling. Of course, he's been dead for decades. But his largest painting ever, 8 feet by 20 feet wide, was first commissioned by Peggy Guggenheim. It's now up at the Getty after being in Iowa for the last 50 years.
That's definitely a good one.
It's apparently quite stunning. And for you golf fans, this week is the Toshiba Classic, which will be starting this week.
How's
and
your golf game, by the way?
Not so good.
Okay, good.
Not so good. Not so good at all. Okay. And then, of course, there's some movies that are out. 300 is probably going to be the number one without question. But my thumbs up goes to The Wind Rises. It's Hayao Miyazaki's last film. Famous anime director, won the Academy Award. Absolutely brilliant. Took the family to see it last night. Hysterical.
Beautiful. With 300, by the way, that's 3D, yes?
Yes, it is. Or you can see it in 2D if you're scared of 3D.
It's just the same movie 3D?
It is indeed, but they charge you a few extra dollars.
Yeah, well, it was a great movie to watch. Megan, you got...
I'm up pretty up dried this week.
You're dry this week. Okay, well, that's
well, there is a movie that I was reading about yesterday. It's about the God Particle. It's more of a documentary.
Mm-hmm. It is indeed.
Yeah, that's getting great reviews.
The Super Hadron Collider.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So and that's something I'd be interested in.
The director is a physicist, so it's supposed to be a very excellent show.
Little education.
And I would recommend that as well. It's only playing, I believe, at the Edwards by University.
Yes.
Give us the name of that again. The God Particle?
That's not the name of the documentary.
But what is it?
It's the Hadron Super Collider.
You can't, gotcha.
The only thing that has a weird title.
If you look up the Edwards movie theater by UCI, you'll see it.
Very nice. Very nice. Great. Thank you. Hey, also in the studio... Jill. It's our lifestyle coach, Jill Harvey.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, young lady?
Good. How are you? How are you guys feeling?
I don't know. Everybody seems to be feeling
pretty good. It's going to be a beautiful day.
Healthy.
Stoked.
Healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's going on, Jill? We did a very cool thing last week where you came in and sort of talked to us about portions.
Right.
And why it was important to sort of manage our food portions, right?
Absolutely.
Where are we going today with this?
Today, I think we should revisit it just to reiterate. Do you guys remember protein?
Palm of your hand.
The palm of your hand, minus your fingers.
Good.
One cupped hand would be the serving of a half cup of cooked rice, cooked pasta.
Right.
Two hands cupped, your vegetables. And then from the tip of your thumb to the base of your thumb is your hard cheese. And the very padded tip is like a teaspoon.
What's the rule for soft cheese, by the way?
of your olive oil, your butter.
Okay.
So... this is easy, and it's really adaptable and individual to each of us.
Yeah, that's a great visual.
Yeah.
I love that.
So today, though, I thought we would discuss what to eliminate or try to eliminate from your diet and what to add to your diet.
Great,
So when we're thinking of eliminating, we're thinking the usual. We all know, no white flour, no white sugar.
What?
I'm sorry. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
One egg and a piece of toast.
Flour and sugar. It's a poor choice, I guess.
You're on the right track.
Milk was a bad choice.
Tell me, what kind of foods would those include?
So we would have in that fried foods. We would have the white rice, white pasta.
Uh-huh.
And what we're going to really get into, though, are processed foods and packaged foods. And processed has a scale of minimally processed to... severely processed. So we're looking more at the severely processed, the highly processed foods.
for example.
And, you know, we just found out what this week that we're eating our gym shoes and our yoga mats. Did you hear that?
No.
Pardon me?
I don't even know what that means.
I've got to cut back on my drinking.
I know. Or drink more. So if I were to hold up this piece of paper with this word on it, could you pronounce this word?
No.
No.
Okay. So
Megan
this is
probably could.
Oh, that last part's a little tricky.
Right. That is the ingredient. It's a rubber that is used in the soles of our gym shoes and our yoga mats, and they're finding it in our baked goods.
Ouch.
Our soft breads, they're finding it, right, in our crescent rolls. So we want to stay away from it. And the Food and Drug Administration has put that on the GRAS list, which means generally recognized as safe. How is this even possible? I mean, that we're eating things that they decide are safe for us, and it's used in rubber mats. Exactly.
How does that end up in the food? I don't get that. I mean,
it's a conditioning agent. They have found it as a conditioning agent.
I see.
And a bleaching agent to make it more doughy. It's easier for bakers to work with, but it's not healthy for us. I mean, we're looking, when you look at stability and shelf life, shelf life has a long life. But when we eat that product, it doesn't lead to a long life for us. But if I were to hold this word up.
Apple.
Right. So you could eat that. You know, it's just basic, simple understanding and becoming informed and aware of consumers. When you're reading a list of ingredients and you see something like that rubber word, whatever that is, and you don't know what it is, my rule of thumb is if you can't pronounce it, it shouldn't go in your mouth.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
Can't pronounce it? I don't know, Robert, you're looking at me strange.
I'm having a lot of thoughts about that rule.
There's some sort of pet walking around the floor here. I don't know what's going on. Some guy on all fours. Hey, you know, I wrote a book years and years ago with a guy named Bob Del Monteque, and he was like best friends with Joe Weider. And at the time that we wrote this book, he was in his 70s. And it was about how seniors can sort of maintain their age with healthy habits, right?
Right.
And he always had this one-liner I thought was great. He said, eat everything as close to nature
as
possible.
Absolutely.
Does that kind of resonate with you?
Yeah, and that's where we're going to add, things we should add. And we know this. The problem is these packaged processed foods are convenient and quick.
Right.
Right? And we are looking at time management. But if we learn to make simple changes and eat organic when possible and grass-fed and natural meats when possible and fish when possible, it's going to be easier. It takes a little more work, and we have to plan our week and plan our meals, visit farmers markets, you know, really be aware, because you're eating artificial coloring, artificial flavoring, MSG. This is just not good for our body, for our cells. It's destroying us at a cellular level. Mm-hmm. When we eat whole foods and close to nature, we're getting what nature intended, if it's not GMO, if it's not, you know, filled with preservatives. So we really want to, again, when possible, when affordable, eat organic, eat close to nature, and enjoy the process of preparing the food. It's like a meditation.
And if you eat your food from Whole Foods, you'll have so little money to buy things, you will have smaller portions by design.
It can be more expensive, yes?
They can be, but the more we buy them, the price will go down. That's the nature of business. Mm-hmm. You know, and when we're looking, when we get back to the word processed, on the minimal side, that has actually done some good for our society. So we're looking at minimally processed means pre-cut vegetables, bagged lettuces, and we've actually seen an increase in consumption by consumers who are now able to eat that. It's convenient. They don't have to spend the time chopping it up.
Beautiful.
But when we're looking at highly preserved and highly processed, this is dangerous.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping that if this week, if listeners could go out and buy more organic and really prepare healthier, nutrient-dense foods, swap out white pasta for, you know, brown rice pasta. Eat more quinoa, eat more brown rice, eat whole grains.
Yeah, that sounds healthy, but it doesn't
always
sound appetizing for me. I mean, if it's quinoa and brown rice,
it doesn't. Kale? You a kale guy?
Kale chips, I've tried them, but they're not the same.
They're not the same.
And I think that's part of the problem, is the weakness of the discipline that I have to eat the healthy foods.
Right, right. Well, you know, and it's, again, prepare it. Like quinoa absorbs any flavor you put in it. So being creative with it and re-educating our palate. Mm-hmm. We're used to the salty. We're used to the fatty. Yeah. We're used to the sweet. When you suddenly take salt out for a week and then you eat something salty, it's surprising how you're repulsed by it. So it's just a re-educating sense of our palate.
How long will it take, do you think, before someone would notice some changes?
I would guarantee in a week. Give a week to 10 days, you cut out processed foods, you cut out all the wheat-based products and the chemicals, you're going to feel better.
Great.
And you add in the whole nutrients, and I would like to see people do this more often and
share.
Would
a challenge here, a host challenge. For
Yes. Good idea.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
There you go.
Would Robert have to cut out alcohol or anything along those lines? Or
let's
is
not
that...
get crazy here.
Yeah. That's, yeah, we'll get to alcohol in another show. But if we could just cut that stuff out and eat whole, we're good to go.
That's great, Jill. Thank you
so much
for coming in.
Have a healthy
Thanks
day.
Thanks a lot, Jill. Great.
Thank you.
Have a healthy day. Wonderful. Hey, Legends of Rock. Robert.
Legends of Rock. Rock.
William Martin Joel, otherwise known as Billy, was born in the Bronx on May 9, 1949. His father, Howard, was born in Germany and had fled from the Nazis. He was a classically trained pianist and insisted that his son learn to play classical piano. That did not go over well with Billy's young friends, who decided to bully and beat the hell out of him. So Billy took up boxing and actually became quite good at it. He was in the Golden Glove circuit and won 22 out of 24 bouts, finally broke his nose and quit.
Famous broken nose.
He did indeed. So he began playing piano at the tender age of 14, and he played in a bar, and he helped his mother make money.
Wow.
Because of that, he never graduated high school. As Billy Joel said, well, to hell with it. If I'm not going to go to Columbia University, I might as well go to Columbia Records. And oddly enough, 10 years later, that's exactly who signed him. He then said his epiphany came watching none other than the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, where he decided for the first time to actually try rock music instead of classical music. Signed up with a band, and they had a number of albums, but they were all unmitigated failures. Then he was invited on April 5th, 1972, to play a live show for a radio station in Philadelphia. He played this particular song, and it became a nationwide hit for him. One of the heads of Columbia Records heard this particular live broadcast, called him, flew him to Los Angeles, and signed him up. He put out his first album, which was an amazing success. And everyone knows the song from that, Piano Man. You can detect the classical train there.
Beautiful.
At the time he wrote this, he was actually playing in a bar in L.A., and he had a lifetime contract that he was fleeing because he couldn't play for anyone else other than this miserable company. So he played under a pseudonym and got sick of playing this damn song every night for the patrons. This inspired him to play Piano Man, which was released in 1973. Also on that album, one of my personal favorites, where you can hear an amazing piano intro here, Angry Young Man. I defy you to try and play this.
Yeah, I remember this song. Great song. Have you tried it? You're a pianist?
I do. I play it very badly.
Okay.
That'd be Liberty DeVito on the drums.
Yeah. The animated Robert.
Joel returned to New York in 1976 and recorded Turnstiles, one of his most popular albums of all time. Oddly enough, it was originally recorded with a number of the members from Elton John's band.
Yeah.
He hated it, threw it away, and re-recorded the whole thing himself, releasing what to this day is one of his most famous and I think one of his most beautiful songs. New York State of Mind. Barbra Streisand and Tony Bennett would later on go to do covers of this beautiful song, and he used to end almost every show with this song. Well, Columbia then turned him over to the legendary producer Phil Ramone, who went on to produce all of his albums from The Stranger in 1977 to Bridge in 1986. Stranger was a huge hit, and he became known as a balladeer at that point, writing two beautiful ballads. Of course, the beautiful Rhodes electronic piano.
Don't go changing to try and please me. You never let me down before.
Played through a flanger to give it that wonderful effect. He had another hit off the album as well. Indeed, he had four top 25 hits off this album. She's Always a Woman.
She can kill with a smile. She can wound with her eyes.
This album was so successful, it actually outsold A Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon & Garfunkel, which is out at the same time.
Wow.
The album won Grammy for Record of the Year and Song of the Year. He later did 52nd Street, which came out, sold over 7 million copies, including Big Shot, Honestly, and My Life. Glass Houses then came out, and it spent 6 weeks on the Billboard number one chart. It was a tribute to doo-wop in the 50s. Not my favorite song, I think a bad era in Billy Joel, but this was his big hit.
What's the matter with the clothes I'm wearing? Can't you tell that your tie's too wide? Maybe I should buy some old tab collars. Welcome back to the age of jive. Where have you been hiding out lately, honey? You can't dress trashy till you spend a lot of money.
He followed up on this hideous song with another hit off of his next album, An Innocent Man, a similar doo-wop tribute. Megan's rocking out to this one. He then put out his greatest hits album, and it became the third best-selling album of all time, selling 11.5 million copies. He later got a little more hardcore and got back to his roots a little bit and came out with Stormfront, and his first single off that was one of my favorites, We Didn't Start the Fire. The song would go on to be number one in his last number one hit. In 2000, he began touring all across the United States. His most amazing stop would be in Madison Square Garden, where he sold out an unprecedented 12 concerts in a row.
Wow.
Never done before. Guess who held the record before that? That would be the man from New Jersey, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh,
he had 10 nights. Indeed, he was given the only tribute to a non-athlete. They retired his jersey. They dubbed him number 12, and it hangs in Madison Square Garden to this day. Wow. Billy Joel this year recently announced he was going to do the same thing again. He's over 12 concerts and still going until people are tired of seeing him. He then went on tour with Elton John. You may remember the face-to-face tour, which is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he's still playing at Madison Square Garden. I've got a little trivia here for you.
Go.
Okay. The Stranger, which was released in 1977, is the most successful album Columbia Records has ever released. Guess how much money Billy Joel made from that album?
$100,000.
$3,000.
Wow. Off the album?
Off the album.
He made $3,000.
He did indeed. He had a lot of bad management decisions back then.
I'd say so.
Indeed, here's part of it. His original record company, Family Records, had a deal with him that they got 25 cents of every record he ever made with Columbia or anyone else. That in part attributed to that failure. Finally, he went on in 2003 and, of course, wrote Moving Out. It was Twyla Tharp's beautiful song, or excuse me, dance, and his music was nominated for 10 Tonys. And my favorite Billy Joel quote, there's nothing better than good sex, but bad sex is worse than a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Billy Joel in total had over 40 hits, six-time Grammy winner, and has sold 150 million albums. The amazing Billy Joel.
Very nice. Applause. Round of applause there for Robert Palmer on Legends of Rock. We're going to carry this music out, Megan, for the next 60 seconds, and then we're coming back for our guest, the Orange County Sheriff Coroner, Sandra Hutchins. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
It's the time, if that's what it's all about. Mama, if that's moving up, then I'm moving out. From the medical center.
moving out. Get for your money, and if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Okay, that was Billy Joel. Of course, you're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Scott Hayes here with Robert Palmer. This is Radio Caravan. And Robert, you want to introduce our guest this morning?
I'd be honored to. We have here today our own sheriff and coroner, Sheriff Sandy Hutchins. Pleasure to see you, Sheriff.
Good to see you, Robert.
She's our 12th sheriff, and I think, as I said, by far the best we've ever had. She was selected from a field of 48 candidates on a nationwide search. Our former sheriff, of course, is currently rotting away in jail, so we had an opening. We are so glad you could make it down. She has an amazing career. We'll get into that a little bit. We're so happy to have you come in. Her husband Larry's in the next room. Who's watching Tucker the dog? Is he at home?
He's by himself.
All right, wonderful. Thanks
Highly
for coming.
Highly upset.
Yes. He should be.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
I'm curious, how did you and Robert meet, just out of curiosity?
Well, you won't find this surprising. We met at a party.
Oh.
So knowing Robert, you know, that's not unusual, right?
Yeah. But you guys became quick friends, I guess.
We did. Yeah? We did. Very quick friends. And we've been friends ever since, and have dinner together from time to time, and just enjoy it.
That sounds great. Well, yeah. Thanks again for coming in.
Yeah,
appreciate
my pleasure.
It. You know, I was doing some research. We were doing some research for this interview, and I had learned very quickly that you started your career as a secretary.
Yes.
For the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department.
Yes. So when I get asked, how did you get in law enforcement in the 70s, early 70s, you know, women didn't grow up thinking, gee, I'm going to be a cop someday.
Yeah.
And so I was putting myself through community college at the time, trying to make a living, and I had secretarial skills. So I applied to the Los Angeles County as a whole and got picked up by the Sheriff's Department. I didn't mean it that way.
That didn't sound right.
That didn't sound right, no. I got hired by the Sheriff's Department, and now I'm working in Pico Rivera Station, typing in bookings and, you know, seeing how the work that they do and how they do it. So ultimately, I was asked by a couple detectives to apply.
What do you think they saw in you to ask you to apply for something that you probably hadn't considered up to that point, yes?
You know, I think there was a push at the time to hire more women, and I think that they saw that, you know, I, you know, was smart enough, you know, I understood how the job worked, and maybe physically could get through the academy. It was in pretty good shape, and and so I think that's what caused it, and I'm glad they did. I don't think I would have done it if someone had not said, hey, why don't you think about it? I just don't think I would have.
No one's ever suggested law enforcement for me. I don't know why that is.
Well, we'll talk about that later. Offline, no.
No. So were there any sort of unique hurdles you had to overcome as a woman in an industry that probably your career up to that point that was probably dominated mostly by men, yes?
Yeah, still is.
Still is.
There's been a little progress in terms of the numbers. But yeah, I think you'll find it interesting that I don't think the public was quite ready for it. You know, I remember driving around in a police car by myself, and I would get double takes from the public that look and say, there's a woman in that car. And
some woman stole the police car.
She's by herself. Oh, my God. So, I think it was new for the public. You were certainly many times, and still today, I'm the only woman in the room. Mm-hmm. I look around, I'm only a woman in the room. And mm-hmm. So we still have some progress to make there, but mm-hmm. women make very good law enforcement officers, because it's more about communication, resolving conflict, than it is on TV. Yeah, are there officer-involved shootings? Are there fights? Are there, you know, those kinds of things? But more frequently, it's a domestic disturbance, it's a neighborhood dispute, it's a business dispute. So having those communication skills to work through it and not let your ego get involved in it,
yeah.
and just try and resolve conflict.
And those communication skills carried you through your career up to the point to where you became Sheriff Coroner, yes?
Right. Well, I think what I have done, and what I advise other people to do in their careers, when you get comfortable, it's time to move. If you're comfortable, it's time to go do something else.
Right.
Don't turn down a job. Don't turn down the job that nobody else wants, because you're going to learn something from that. So mm-hmm. that's what I did.
How do you get comfortable running the LA SWAT team, counterinsurgency, counterterrorism, FBI academies? How do you get tired of that?
Well, you yeah,
or comfortable with
you,
that.
You well, you don't. You know, you just you never get entirely comfortable. I mean, I always say, you know, I've got 1,900 people out there with guns. What could go wrong? You never get totally comfortable with it, but you got to trust the people that are trained to do it.
Right.
And you've got to give them the tools and let them know that you trust them, but you're going to hold them accountable for what they do.
So share with us a story about how you went from L.A. to Orange County, which mm-hmm. most people don't know. You live in Orange County and have lived here for a very long time.
Long time, yeah.
So how did that come up?
Well, I lived in Dana Point, right down the road here, and I was commuting to Monterey Park, which is L.A. County headquarters, for about 10 years.
Wow.
And entered into my decision to retire. But when I was going through the appointment process, people kept welcoming me to Orange County. And I said, well, thank you very much, but I've lived here for many, many years.
I think that was my opening line to
you. I'm not new. Yeah, you said, welcome to Orange County. I said, thanks. But I'm a resident, yeah.
And I live just a few miles down the street here.
Yeah.
And what was it like applying for that and going through that process with our Orange County Board of Supervisors?
Well, it was interesting. You know, they hired a search firm after then Sheriff Corona decided to retire because he was under indictment and is still in federal prison finishing his sentence. But they hired a search firm, so I applied to the search firm. And then 48, as you said, applied. 17 of us were interviewed by the search firm. And then here's an interesting take. 9 of us were selected to interview in front of the board in a public setting. So here's a interview for a job in a public setting, and everybody's watching because this is unusual to appoint a sheriff. You know, it's an elected position. And there was a lot of interest because of the indictment of the former sheriff and what's going to go on with this department. And I got selected. It got down to 2 of us, and I got selected on a resounding 3-2 vote. It was not unanimous. 3 people selected me to be sheriff of a county of 3.1 million people. But then I spent a lot of time going out into the community so people knew who I was, because now I'm running for sheriff in 2010. So I had to get out there, make changes in the department. I told them what I was going to do, and I just wanted people to get to know me. I think it's important for them to get to know the candidate. And, you know, a lesson to politicians out there, be honest. People can read through you. They can tell whether you're genuine or not.
Sure.
The voters are very intelligent that way. So.
And actually, you're really not much of a politician. That's, I think, my favorite thing about you. And you don't play it one way or the other. You just play it down the middle, and you're kind of the anti-politician. Yet here you are running for office again.
Right.
What's that like?
Well, you know, as of 5 o'clock last night was the cutoff, and no one is running against me.
Wow, so
I'm running
congratulations.
Which is something we call a free ride. And sheriff, you have to run for sheriff, but I don't think the sheriff should be political. By that I mean it's a nonpartisan office.
Mm-hmm.
I serve everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it's not true that you only arrest Democrats?
No, that's not true.
I'd heard that.
An equal opportunity arrestor. So it's important to keep the politics out of the office, and so I try and depoliticize it as much as possible.
Yeah.
And I'm careful. I get asked Sheriff, what's your position on abortion? And, you know, I say it's irrelevant
right.
To what I do. My job is to protect people if they want to protest on either side of the issue to respect their right. Yeah. And so I don't think it's good for a sheriff to come out strongly on that.
But certainly, you know, there are issues that surface as sheriff, coroner, yes? And
yes.
One of the issues that seemed to surface early was sort of this concealed weapons permit
right.
issue.
Right.
Can you sort of give us a little background of what
right.
went on there and how many people carried concealed weapons permit at the time that you entered office?
Right.
And
yeah, well, for, you know, concealed weapons permits, you can have guns in your home, mm-hmm. your place of business. That's not a problem.
Right.
But if you want to carry it concealed on your person, like under your jacket or in your purse, you have to have a permit from the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the old rules, they've just recently been changed, and I'll get into that, but the old rules were you had to have good cause, meaning you had to have a reason beyond the normal, you know, person could not carry one. So why am I going to give you the right to do that? So a lot of times if some people carry large quantities of money late at night or are engaged in businesses that put them at risk or they've had a threat or lately if they're in politics, things like that.
They have good cause to carry a concealed weapon.
You're right. And so I would issue those. When I came in, mm-hmm. what I said was there was a lot of controversy surrounding this and people
right.
had reported that the prior sheriff if you gave him a campaign contribution, he gave you an application
right.
for concealed weapons.
You got
permit.
A badge too, as I recall.
You got
those
a badge
were handed out
too.
Very freely.
You had a badge too. So what I said, LA Times reporter came to me, you know, about a week after I'd been appointed, and said, "What are you going to do about those concealed weapons permits?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm going to look at them. I'm going to review them and see if they're legitimate." And that created a firestorm.
Right.
Because that got translated into, oh, my goodness, she's going to take away all our concealed weapons permits. So there were like 1,200. I think after I reviewed them, we got it down to about 900.
Mm-hmm.
And that number, you know, 900, 980 was consistent for quite some time. And then there was that recent decision, the Peruta decision out of San Diego County. And the Ninth Circuit, it was a three-judge panel, 2-1, said that good cause was unconstitutional, that people could have a concealed weapons permit for personal safety. And so that changed everything.
You
so,
keep winning or losing by one vote. Have you noticed that trend?
Yeah,
there?
It's always a 2-1. Yeah. So just like I said when there was this huge, you know, controversy about me looking at the CCWs and following the law of good cause, I said, I'll follow the law. It's not my personal opinion. It's mm-hmm. following the law. So now, you know, I immediately posted to our website that we're going to follow the Peruta decision.
Mm-hmm.
And you can apply for personal safety.
Mm-hmm.
So the life of the sheriff is everybody's unhappy. The people who want the concealed weapons permits, I'm not moving fast enough. And then there's the Brady campaign on the other side of the equation that says, why are you following this decision? It's going to get overruled or, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be reviewed. So you always have that, you know, you got to have that balance. So for me as a sheriff,
mm-hmm.
it's about following the law.
Right.
And that's what I try and do. And sometimes people get angry about it, but that's...
And consistent that's with your view, I saw an interview where they asked you if you thought the decision was correct. And your answer was essentially... It's not my position to take a position on the decision.
That's right.
It's the law, and I'm going to follow the law.
That's, it's as simple as that. It's the law, and you know, I find it interesting that the sheriffs get caught in the middle, not the people who are making the decisions.
Right.
You know, so but that's just the way it is. So right now we are issuing them. We've had like 1,200.
It triggered
requests.
An avalanche of applicants. Yes,
yes, a lot of applicants. We put some more people to work because we do a background. You know, we
right.
don't just give you a concealed weapons permit. We
mm-hmm.
do a background, make sure there's no criminal history, mental illness, the folks that we don't want to have weapons out there. And that has to go through the State Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the training, they have to get some training, but not just shooting, but training on liability, when you can use the weapon,
mm-hmm.
you know, those kinds of things. So we're very careful to follow that procedure as well.
I mean, in theory, though, are we going to see more people carrying around concealed weapons?
You won't see them. That's the whole point of the concealed
weapon. We won't see people carrying around concealed weapons.
No.
Let me tell you, the first time I saw the sheriff, I think my second question to you was, are you packing?
Yeah, right. He
yeah.
did. And then he said, where is it?
Yeah, exactly.
But another interesting part of the case is this. Another item that they leaned on in their decision was recently in the state of California, open carry was abolished. You could not go around and carry a weapon. Now, when you had open, when we had open carry, you could carry a weapon on your hip, but it couldn't be loaded.
Yeah.
But they eliminated that. So the judge said, because California eliminated that, you're not allowing people to protect themselves outside their homes.
Hmm.
So that was another interesting twist. And Orange County, we have a similar lawsuit to Peruta, and virtually identical, but different people. And so that's also a consideration.
Now, is our AG Camilla Harris, isn't she challenging the Ninth Circuit decision?
She is. She is. She's requested a review of the decision. And the Ninth Circuit itself can decide that they're going to hear it en banc, all of the justices. But I haven't heard that they've done that. The county, or actually Sheriff Bill Gore in San Diego County, could have appealed, and he decided not to appeal.
You know, I'm curious. I'm going to go back. You said there are roughly 900 people who currently have these permits.
Right.
And you've had about 1,200 applicants.
Mm-hmm.
Of the percentage of those applicants that will ultimately end up with a permit, any sense of what that looks like? And are we going to double the number of people?
I would say easily. Easily we could double the number of people. Most
right.
people that do apply, do have a good background. We don't get too many people with criminal backgrounds actually coming in to see us in the first place, but applying for it.
They do come in to see you, but involuntarily. But
in a different way, yeah. They come through a different door. But and most of them probably will be eligible for the permit.
And do they, very quickly, do they apply online? Do they have to come in person for an interview?
They can apply online, but eventually there is an interview.
Great.
Yeah, everything's on our website.
You've proposed recently, and I think I got this right, you correct me if I don't, yeah? You proposed recently that some felons, sending home some felons with electronic monitoring devices
right.
to help sort of deal with or relieve the jail overcrowding.
Right.
What's the situation there?
Well, after AB 109, the prisoner realignment, where, people who would have been sentenced to state prison for certain offenses are now being sentenced to the county jail. So right now I have close to 7,000 people in my five jails, which is nearing capacity. And so what I've already done is I went to the Board of Supervisors and asked, I had to get their authority to do electronic monitoring for some misdemeanor offenders. And we've been doing that for about a year now. And what I mean by that is they do most of their sentence, but the last 5-10 days, if they are a nonviolent offender, if they've got contacts on the outside family, we put them on electronic monitoring for the last 5-10 days of their sentence. And that helps us balance out our population. I'm running out of misdemeanors. We're 85% felon in our jails.
Wow.
Now, when people hear felony, they go, oh, my God, you're going to let a felon out of jail. Well, a felon could be someone who's committed a petty theft, but they've done it more than one time. It's called petty theft with a prior. It could be prosecuted as a felon. Felony. Is that person a danger to the community? No.
Right.
So those are the kind of people we're talking about. And it's only about 200 that would apply at any given that would be eligible at any given time. So I did go to the board. They're uncomfortable with it. I'm going to go back and explain it a little bit better to them, but because it's something I need to manage our jail population. We do have, we did get monies for additional jail construction, $180 million from the state, but it takes about 5 years to build out a jail. But that will keep the county with enough prison space for years and years to come. And we're also working on reducing recidivism, which I'm a big believer in. There are people that we can, with the right programming, we can get them out of the jail system. And because it costs you a lot of money, whether you think someone should be locked up for their entire sentence, we're paying for their medical care.
Sure.
It costs a lot of money for the people that work in the facilities. It costs a lot of money to run the jails. Electronic monitoring's dollars a day. Versus, $100 or a medical procedure that we have to do in custody. So,
what type of programs are you referring to help people from coming back to prison again?
Right. Well, we're doing, we've been doing a number of programs. But one of the things we're doing is we're identifying the people that come in and out of the system. We call them the frequent flyers. They've been in and out of our system many, many times. They recidivate. We're going to target them. And what we're going to do is look at their background and see what do they need to be successful. You know, if it's a high school degree, mm-hmm. we're going to work on that. If they need counseling in alcohol or drug abuse, we're going to do that. And we're working with nonprofits outside of the jail itself.
Excellent.
Because that's where we lose them, when they get released from jail. And if they don't have any safety net, then they end up going back into their same, you know, behavior. So we're doing that. We're going to track it, and we're going to see how successful we are.
That sounds wonderful. And that program's starting? It's already started?
Right. We've already started it.
Excellent.
Is that patented after someone else's program that has worked, or is this innovative and different?
It's innovative and different, but it's based on evidence-based practices that are out there now. And so we don't have a lot of that. We don't have a lot of data that shows us what works and what doesn't. So we're trying a variety of things.
In the 60s, rehabilitation was a big theory of criminal justice, and you saw that go away in the 80s and the 90s. And
I think it went away because the crime rate went up, and then people were, you know, they just want people locked up. Right. That's when three strikes came out, mm-hmm. all of that. And so we're enjoying record low crime rates. And so I think people are now saying, well, hey, there might be a better way to do this for certain offenders. Don't get me wrong. Some offenders need to be locked up and locked up forever because they're a threat to the community. You know, they're violent offenders. But we're talking about people, and there's not a person in jail that has not had a drug or alcohol abuse problem that's led to some other crime. Yeah. So if we can attack that, and on the other end, do prevention programs for our kids so that they never get into that system to begin with. Mm-hmm. I think we can have a real impact.
That sounds great. I'm going to we're down to about 4 minutes. I'm going to make a sort of a dramatic shift here. Last year, you were diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer.
Yes.
You came out recently publicly announcing that, and you continued to work through your treatments. And I guess one of the things we all kind of want to know is, how are you doing currently?
Well, I'm in remission. Mm-hmm. I finished my treatments, and you know, I had chemotherapy, surgery, radiation. Mm-hmm. I did everything the doctors said to do. You know, before you get cancer, you think, oh gosh, would I really do chemo? Or, well, when they tell you got stage 3 cancer, the first things out of your mouth is, what do I have to do to get better, to get well?
To stay alive.
Am I going to live? Right. You know, and so I had a bone scan and mammogram. Everything's clear right now. So I got through it. And so my message to people is get checked frequently, do your self exams. I had a mammogram 6 months prior. I found it myself, and it was already stage 3. Mm. And to women, if you find something, go in. Don't be afraid. Go mm-hmm. in. It's treatable. Mm-hmm. Don't wait.
Yeah. You know, the standard question is, how does this affect a person's perspective on life? But my question for you is, how does something like this affect your perspective on your career or your job?
Well, you know, you do have that thought that, gee, am I going to continue to do this? You know, how much time do I have left? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a constant, you know, reminder. Mm-hmm. Every day, I can tell you, it's changed my outlook for the better on life. You always say you're not going to worry about the little stuff. Well, mm-hmm. after you've had a medical condition like that, you don't worry about the little stuff. Mm-hmm. And you do enjoy every day, like this beautiful day we're enjoying today. Mm-hmm. But I did decide that I wanted to continue to do this job because I'm enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm making a difference. And when I don't think that that's the case, then I will step aside for someone else to carry it to a higher level.
And by the way, I'm remiss in not complimenting how beautiful your hair looks today. We had an agreement that every time I saw you, I was supposed to say how beautiful.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Thanks.
Hey, I guess we have time for one more, Megan. We got what does it take to be a successful sheriff coroner, do you think?
You have to, first of all, I think you have to have done the job mm-hmm. of the people that you're leading. And so I've done everything. I wasn't a coroner. That's probably the only thing I haven't done. I haven't done an autopsy or anything, and you don't want me to do one. But but I've worked the jail. I've worked the streets. I've worked investigations. You mm-hmm. know, I've done the things that they've done. So I understand the challenges that they have. And then you have to risk. Mm-hmm. When I say risk, you got to let them do their job. Mm-hmm. You got to trust them. You know, you've got to tell them what you expect. Hold people accountable. But you got to trust them. And let them take it to a place you could never imagine. And that's what I've done my entire life as a manager. and it's worked for me, and it's working today. We got a great team, and I don't worry about it.
Beautiful,
it
yeah.
goes well.
Very nice. Hey, thank you so much. I mean, it's obvious why you were voted in or elected into this position. You come across as a very honest and genuine person. And
thank you.
I just appreciate you coming in and spending time with us.
Thanks. It was fun. Thank yeah. you. I had a great time.
Robert, of course, you made the call on this. So.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Sandy. I have
thank
the
you.
Honor of having her come on the board of the United Way with me in April. We're
oh, nice.
Excited
right.
to have you helping out the community in that way.
Wow.
And you are the sheriff, but to quote Billy Joel, you're always a woman to me. So we'll go out on that song.
That's a great way to close.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks for coming in.
That's beautiful. Hey, you've been listening to KX93.5 FM. This is Radio Caravan. I'm Scott Hayes.
Robert Palmer.
And we're back next week. Megan, take us out of here.
Take it away, Billy.